8 Conference Committee will come to order. I want to thank members of the committee for their time and effort and am pleased in their selection and expect that we will have a friendly session and resolve this in a matter of a few minutes. This bill, I know for me, has been here for 8 years, plus about 10 years before that while I was on the state patrol, so I have a lot of battles on that. I know that Senator Skoglund and Senator Knudsen have equally been involved in this a long period of time, and I know the others of you that have also, and so with that background and knowledge, we obviously have an opportunity to skip a lot of the things that many conference committees have to deal with and really get to the meat of the issue. And I hope to do this morning is to go through the side-by-side and look at the issues that we have not discussed previously in the Senate or the House, and to kind of become familiar with those. And then following that, we expect that we will take a short recess and caucus on the committees and then come back and see where we are. I do not intend to take any testimony unless some clarification is needed on some of the issues that we're discussing in the side-by-side. Without further ado, I will ask Senate Counsel Ken Baucus to kind of give us an overview on the side-by-side.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As you probably are aware, there is a side-by-side bill comparison here prepared by the Revisor's Office. House Research prepared a one-page comparison summary, which is also, I believe, in your packets or has been handed out. And then there are the individual summaries of each bill. I think most everybody knows that both the House and Senate have identical provisions as it relates to the .08 issue. Both the House and Senate lower the per se alcohol concentration level for all types of impairment offenses. The Senate effective date is August 1, 2004, and the House effective date is September 1st, 2007. In addition to the .08 provisions, both the House and Senate, this is on R12 of the side-by-side, require chief law enforcement officers to report specified information to the Commissioner of Public Safety regarding alcohol concentration tests taken by peace officers. And in turn, this information is to be reported to the legislature. Those provisions are identical except for the fact that, based on the effective dates being different, the dates in those reports are also different. Also, as a consequence of the difference in effective dates, the Senate has a appropriation section if the House doesn't. That's Senate Section 14 on page R12 and R13, and that appropriates money to the Attorney General, Department of Public Safety, Supreme Court, Public Defenders, and Department of Corrections. Finally, the House has four House-only provisions that the Senate does not have. The first is House Section 11, which is on page R6. This requires the Department of Public Safety to purge driver's license records of first-time DWI offenders where the violation involved an alcohol concentration of at least 0.08 but less than 0.10. The record would have to be purged after 10 years if there's been no additional violation, DWI violation, within that 10-year time frame. House Sections 13 and 15 on page R7 and R9 are also house-only provisions. They direct that court surcharges and criminal fines that would otherwise be going to the general fund for a first-time DWI offender where the alcohol concentration is at least 0.08 but less than 1.0, that money would instead have to stay at the local level and go to the jurisdiction responsible for prosecuting the offense. Finally, House Section 14 involves breath alcohol testing devices. That's on page R7 and R8. And what it does is it amends the civil liability immunity law that relates to breath alcohol testing devices on the premises of licensed liquor establishments. What the House does there is it requires that the notice that informs users of the immunity provisions be posted on the device or adjacent to it, rather than anywhere in the licensed premises. The House also no longer requires certification of devices by the Department of Public Safety and strikes the authorization for the Department to adopt rules that prescribe the performance and maintenance standards for the devices. Instead, the House requires the devices be calibrated and maintained on a schedule and in a manner consistent with the minimum guidelines of the manufacturer. And then finally, the House modifies the way the test results will be indicated by the device. So again, to reiterate, the 0.08 provisions are identical, the effective dates are different, and that there's the Senate-only appropriation and then the four House-only provisions.
Members, you want to start out with the issue on the purging and the driver license? Perhaps the House members would like to... explain what that is or why we were there.
Mr. Chair, perhaps Representative Howell would like to speak to that.
Representative Howell, I understand that you are going to tell us the propriety of what is that section?
Mr. Chair, it's section 11 on page R6.
R6.
Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members, when I started to put together a 0.08 bill and talked to many different people and also looked at Wisconsin's law that they had just passed not too far back, and it was the feeling of many of the House members that I spoke with that we should allow that caveat in there that after 10 years you have not violated since then, we felt that your record should be purged. So you start out with a clean slate.
Representative Howell, is that apply to any DUI offender, or does that only apply to those people that have been charged and convicted of 0.08 or 0.09?
Mr. Chairman, it would only apply to a first-time offender under 0.08 or at 0.08 and did not repeat. So if you had someone that had offended in the past at 0.10 and then they got a 0.08, that would not apply to them. But if you have someone with a clean record and violates at 0.08, doesn't repeat, their record would be purged.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Howes, so does that mean that if somebody in their 10th and a half year did repeat, they'd be treated as a first-time offender?
Mr. Howes?
Mr. Chairman, it would be a second, but I'm going to have to ask.
That's correct. If they did repeat, it's already on the record.
You're saying within the 10-year period.
No, Mr. Chairman.
After the 10-year period, Representative Spoglin, they would again look like a first-time offender.
Representative Lesh.
That would apply, however, to any situation, because for purposes of enhancement for first degree or second degree, as it stands currently, a person who gets a DWI 10 years after their first one is still treated as a first-time offender.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Representative Howe.
One of the reasons we also did that was to help folks that maybe had a first-time offense 10 years later. Having their record purged, it would also help them with their automobile insurance, and that was a big issue in the House.
There are two concerns that I've heard in regard to this, and perhaps you might address those. One of those is that that if we adopted this, that we would not be in compliance with the federal government standards. Do you have any information in regard to that?
Mr. Chairman, when we again put this together, we, at least I, previously to Representative Strand and your bill going through the process, I was working on my bill, we checked with the federal government, with Wisconsin, and what they had checked with the federal government. And as of this date, the federal government has not told me that this is not allowable. And if I remember correctly, my staff has said this is acceptable by the federal government.
Senator Scogo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, I don't think I understood you correctly. Did you say that this is the standard for the 0.10 violations now?
Yes,
Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scogo, the way the law is currently set up is we can apply enhancement measures for any subsequent DWI within 10 years. If it's outside 10 years, we cannot enhance on that. We do, however, in this, at least the St. Paul City Attorney's Office, I will routinely still enhance time that I ask for in jail based on that. It just does not change times for mandatory minimum and other types of requirements under sentencing.
Mr. Chair, Chairman, though, but we don't purge any record. The record is there so that you have that tool available to you.
That's correct.
But we would be purging, under the House bill, we would be purging that record so that tool would not be available to a prosecutor at that time.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scoglin, that's correct. And part of the reason why I agreed to this this provision and voted for this provision is that I thought most often the only times I ever use that additional time or those additional offenses outside of 10 years is if the blood alcohol content is high or there are other types of aggravating factors. And I thought that in a case where someone was a 0.08 or a 0.09 and it seemed to be a one-time mistake, that they were entitled to the purge of that after 10 years, especially considering we can't use it for the purposes of enhancement anyway. But you're correct in that we wouldn't have that information if this clause was in.
Senator Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Lesh. And you purge only the 0.08 criminal offense, or do you also purge the implied consent record on the driver's license?
Representative Lesh.
I'd say, Senator Knutson, you were referring to in this language?
Right.
My understanding is that we purge the specific criminal offense. So the state of Minnesota driving record is the state of Minnesota driving record. I would guess that for the purposes of insurance, that would have to be purged as well. So I guess to answer your question, overall, all of it would have to be purged to be fair to what we're attempting to try to achieve in the language.
Well, no. Mr. Chairman, we're trying to figure out what your language actually says. Does it say that you would purge the implied consent record on your driver's license record, or does it just say that you would purge the criminal offense on the driving record? And is it just 0.08 or 0.09, or is it?
Mr. Clary.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding of this language that the entire driving record is purged after 10 years. It's not been repeated.
Can you speak a little louder, or some of the audience can't hear you?
Both with regard to the implied consent action and the criminal action, criminal conviction.
Mr. Chairman, you know, while the state may erase its records, we're not erasing any insurance company records. So, I mean, they've got a data bank bigger than we've got, and they share the information with each other. So once it's on, it's there forever with the insurance companies. I want to assure you of that.
But looking at the article, Representative Howells, on line 10 and 11 on page 10 there, it clearly seems to limit it to 0.08 and 0.09 rather than higher readings than that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my intent was to only purge a record of someone who was a first-time offender below 0.10 but yet above 0.08. I had no intention of, if someone were violating at 0.11 or 0.12, this would not apply to them. I wanted that to be very careful that we did it that way.
Senator Scogland?
Chairman, unless you're a prosecutor or prosecutor, don't care. I have a question for you, though. I've been on ride-alongs of where, because of technical problems, the police have only charged a drunk driver with careless driving. And the specific problem was the language problems. They did not have a qualified interpreter to present the test to him. And even though the guy could clearly say, where are you towing my car, where's the bathroom, all that sort of thing, there didn't happen to be a legally qualified interpreter to blow into the tube. And I'm sure you've had other cases like that of where you had to charge him with careless driving instead of drunk driving. Wouldn't this kind of information be helpful to you when that careless driving charge comes along later? And we keep the careless driving charge on the record, if I recall correctly. Why wouldn't we keep this on? Because this is probably worse.
I guess, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scogland, I think, first of all, I've had several of those qualified interpreter. I've won a couple. I've lost a couple, depending on the facts or the mood of the judge at that particular time. But I think the most important reason why I felt that an initial 0.08 or 0.09 reading merited an expungement or purging after 10 years was that it was specifically a low reading. We are entering a period of educating the public that 0.08 is no longer acceptable, and when people make an initial mistake, the average individual who had one drink too many and is now considered in the state of Minnesota to have violated the law, that it merited, at least at this point in the initial part of this legislation, to have it purged after 10 years. That information, I think, yes, would be valuable, but based on public policy, I thought a purge was worthwhile in this instance.
Representative Strauss.
Mr. Chair, just briefly, and maybe we can get a yes or no answer to this. This particular part of the bill treats 0.08 and 0.09 separately from other drunk driving offenses. And it's the only part of the bill, really, that does that. So is it constitutional? Is it clearly constitutional? Number two, does it create problems for us with receiving federal transportation dollars because of that separate treatment? And number three, do we have interstate commerce problems with truckers if they're treated differently on their licenses? I've heard that could become a problem, too. Has anyone? There's three questions there. So,
Representative Strong, are you asking me?
You can answer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Strong, I'd be happy to answer. Let me say I have about a 60% degree of confidence in my answer. Honest with you. It's my understanding, through communicating with Department of Public Safety, that NHTSA has cleared this for us, so it should not be a problem with federal funding. From a constitutional perspective, a number of times in DWI, we've done what's the legislature has done what's reasonable, and we let the courts decide. And sometimes we've been surprised; they've really upheld some major things. Quite possible they would uphold this as well. And your third question, sir, was?
Is there any problem with truckers and interstate commerce?
With truckers. Public safety indicated there probably would not be any problem with that, their word from NHTSA. And again, my confidence level is about 60%.
That's it. Members, counsel has advised me that on page 17 of the fiscal note that you will see near the last third item from the bottom, which says that the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration has previously defined the removal of offenses after 10 years as basking the driving record, commercial driver, and a potential commercial driver. For example, a driver could conceivably be arrested every 10 years with a blood alcohol of 0.08, but less than 0.10, and have a clean record showing no previous violations. The department would face federal sanctions if we failed to report the alcohol concentration for commercial drivers, and could lose the ability to issue a commercial license as well as a loss of federal funds in the licensing program. So it appears that there are some concerns in regard to that issue on the motor carrier safety part of it, and there may be some others that would also apply. Do members have any more questions on this? If not, we'll move on to the next. My co-chair would like to know if Catherine Swanson would be prepared to respond to any questions regarding that issue. Please identify yourself for the record.
Morning. I'm Kathy Swanson. I'm the director of the Office of Traffic Safety in the Department of Public Safety. In terms of whether or not this provision meets NHTSA qualifications on the federal funds that are being withheld, it's my understanding that it does. But the concern comes from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, and they have expressed their concern, just exactly as was read in the fiscal note there, that this would be masking the record of commercial motor vehicle drivers and would therefore put us at risk on some of those funds.
Questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Knudsen.
Well, could we make an exception then and just keep the record for those with commercial licenses?
Members of the committee, the potential problem with that is that your commercial, you could decide after being a senator that you want to become a truck driver, and it's not possible to know in advance. Henry,
could
whether
you
or
move,
not a person would become.
Move those mics a little bit. There's getting feedback there, so try that. See.
It wouldn't be possible to know who's going to be a commercial vehicle driver in advance or whether or not it would be purged inappropriately. It's one license in Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, I assume that the reason for this is the commercial standard is 0.04 for a commercial license, so I'm a little vague on why there's concern about potential commercial drivers. Can you explain that to me? Someone who does not yet have a commercial license versus someone who has violated while driving a personal vehicle, whereby the rate would be 0.10, but who does not. I get, my question is why is the concern for potential individuals who can get commercial licenses?
Ms. Swanson?
I'm not sure that I can give an adequate answer to that, except that that was the explanation that was given to me through the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson. Are we prepared to move to the next item? Not sure. Is that the... What's the order on that? Let's do the surcharge distribution. That's on page.
Mr. Chair and members, page R7, House Section 13 is the disbursement of the criminal surcharge. And then on House Section 15 on page R9 is the disbursement of the criminal fine. Those two provisions are similar conceptually.
And would you address that, Representative Strong?
Mr. Chair, this was a provision that was provided by Representative Howes and others to help mitigate local financial impacts. And with your permission, Mr. Carter, could explain that further?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the first one is the surcharge. As you currently know, that surcharge on fines is now at $60. Basically, this takes all the money that goes to the general fund, which is about $50, and it leaves that with the locals for those that are first-timers that are, you know, range from 0.08 to 0.10. The second part of that is the minimum fine, which the 20% that would go to the state would instead go to the local units of government, once again, for their costs that are associated with 0.08. And this, once again, is for those testing 0.08 to 0.10. And I think you have a similar provision, except we don't take the fines, but you're giving county probation officers in your appropriations dollars. This is the House version to make up for some of the local costs.
Do you have an indication of the revenue on that? Sorry.
The revenue, I believe, on the surcharge, the first year is around $33,000. That goes up to $44,000 the second year. The fine revenue is around $85,000 the first year, and I believe it goes up to about $113,000 the second year and subsequent years.
Questions?
Sure, Mr. Carter. How does it work when there are multiple charges and convictions? The guy's convicted of 0.08 and he's convicted of something else, speeding, careless driving, whatever.
Mr. Carter?
Mr. Chair, Representative Skogel, you know, I'm not sure on that. I may have to defer to one of the attorneys or somebody from the courts on that.
My question actually should be, how will it work?
Yeah.
How does it work? How will it work?
I know the fiscal note was based on the average fines that were, that came out from or that are associated with a DWI, current DWI.
Mr. Chairman, is there someone from the courts here that could tell us how easy this is to do or how difficult it is to do? And if the courts are our general, how much the courts or the general fund would be losing with this diversion to the locals?
Welcome, Ms. Marshall. Would you please identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Janet Marshall with the State Court Administrator's Office.
Will you move your...
This way? In response to Senator Knutson's question, over the past several years, we've tried to make the distribution of fines and fees much easier. This will create a burden on local court administrators, but it's up to you. If you decide for public policy reasons that you want to have the split, then we'll try to accommodate you any way we can.
Senator Scogel.
Mr. Chairman, how does it work? How will this work where there are multiple charges? They're convicted of driving 0.08 and driving without a license and speeding.
Ms. Marshall?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogel, that one will be much more complicated because it will depend on how the payments come into us. As it stands now, people end up often on payment plans, and when the money comes in, then they just first they pay off restitution, and then they pay off fines, and then they pay off surcharges. So that'll make it even more complicated, and it'll depend on how much money comes in at any given time. Eventually, it'll all be paid out if they pay everything.
But, Mr. Chairman, for the violator, he just writes the check, but in terms of how the money gets dispersed, how will it be dispersed under these bills, House and Senate versions, where there's multiple charges and convictions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogel, I'd have to think about that, but I think it's whatever the judge would pronounce as the sentence, that's the way it would be dispersed. If they said your fine is $150 and you have a surcharge, and the person just wrote a check for the entire amount of $210, and that's the way it would be dispersed under the law, depending on the House or Senate.
I'm not posing my question very well, but he's got
pre-convictions, he's going to, maybe he says, now one way to be would be no fine for driving after suspension, no fine for speeding, but a fine for driving at the 0.08 level. Or, and I should ask Representative Lesch how that works where there's multiple convictions.
Representative Lesch.
I guess I would say, Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, the only time I think this would have an impact is if the judge at sentencing pronounced a general sentence for everything. All convictions in cases other than that, there are individual sentences for each conviction. And if the judge then decides to do a general sentence, well, then that's when we get in the quagmire. They don't often do that, in at least in my courtroom that I'm in. So I guess maybe some provision specifying that general sentences are not allowed in these types of situations might be appropriate.
Further questions of this witness?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Knudsen.
Ms. Marshall, you said that it was more difficult or as a burden. Can you describe that process when we keep throwing in different splits of different fine and surcharge amounts on different crimes? And as I understand, this would apply only to This distribution contained in your bill only applies to 0.08 and 0.09, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So could you describe the process and how more difficult it is? Would it end up costing you positions? That kind of thing.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Knudsen, what would end up happening is every time it was a DUI conviction, the court administrator's office would physically have to look at the file to see if this new split applied, and then they would have to go in and manually enter all the information because our current information system won't accommodate this. Our new MNSA system will, but that'll be a few years down the road. So it'll just be much more time consuming.
Members, Senate Counsel has a bit of wisdom.
No, Mr. Chair, and to clarify something Knudsen, I think, asked, it applies if it's 0.08 and 0.09 and also only to a first-time offense. So right. I think it would be two things they'd have to determine.
So that's why they would have to physically go in and figure out, does this apply to this person? So it would be very time-consuming in the larger counties.
And Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Marshall, do you do this kind of manual determination? Do the clerks do this manual determination on the fines and surcharges for any other crimes?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Knudsen, not at this time.
Representative House. Well,
Mr. Chairman, I'm puzzled. If I were pulled over by the State Patrol, and I believe you're a former State Patrol.
That's correct.
And I was... didn't matter if I was 0.08 or not, but if you wanted to look at my record, wouldn't you be able to pull up on your equipment or someone by radio whether I had ever been arrested before while driving under the influence, or wouldn't the courts have some record of this? That's
yeah, for convictions, they would.
Yeah. Well, for convictions, I believe is what we're looking at here in the bill. If someone is convicted, if someone is arrested at 0.08 and goes through the process and is found to have done that, I would assume that the records that our courts have would spell out very quickly and very clearly whether or not that person had ever been convicted before of driving under the influence.
Apparently, that this is a situation where it requires somebody to process those to verify that they have the two items that you've specified in your legislation. One, that they're at that blood alcohol level, and two, that they are have had the number of prior offenses or have not had that. So I can see where they would know the prior offenses, but they clearly might not know the other part of it. Senator Knudsen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawes, I could ask Ms. Marshall, how does the clerk At the end of the day. So they, it's Raymond calendar and our pretrials, and now all the tickets are coming into the clerk's office, and they're collecting all the money. I mean, tell us what happens on our, on these regular fines. again.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Knutson, to the best of my knowledge, especially in the larger jurisdictions, there will be a what we would call a data entry clerk whose entire job is to sit at a desk and enter tickets into the information system. So they would have a stack of tickets that they're entering into the system, and they would, on those that are a conviction for a .08, they would have to stop and go back and make sure it was a first-time offense, because I don't think they would be able to tell that off of the ticket.
So, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Marshall, right now they don't have to look at the offense, the ticket, really anything. They just have to match the amount paid with the person who paid it.
Senator,
basically.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Knutson, that is correct.
Okay, but Mr. Chairman and Ms. Marshall and Representative Hawes, now today, under this provision, then they would have to try to figure out. Okay, we got to stop the entry on this one. This is a DWI. This is between .08 and .09, and it's a first-time offense. And now I've got to calculate the percentage split. And what is it? Does the money go to a specific the local jurisdiction that prosecuted the case, or who does it end up actually going to?
Who are you directing that question to, Senator Knudsen?
Any House member.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Knudsen, I think it says in there that the court administrator, where it goes to the jurisdiction responsible for prosecuting the offense.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator and Ms. Marshall, then they'd have to stop and figure out, okay, on this one then, this was the city of Eagan, and okay, then that money goes to the city of Eagan. And then they proceed on the next one, they find another one, they have to figure out the two factors and figure out then which local municipality prosecuted that case and what the percentage of the surcharge and percentage of the fine goes then to that local municipality and how much gets credited then to St. Paul or...
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hobbs.
You know, I'm just a House member from up north, but if you are arrested for a DUI and brought in, and you guys, what do you process people in? You're telling me that when that person goes before the judge, and let's say it's Apple Valley to pick a place, that the judge in the court or the clerk does not know when that person shows up whether or not they've been convicted before of driving while under the influence? And if they have not, then this legislation would say that a portion of that money would go to Apple Valley. Now, if our court system, when that person is standing before the judge, whatever time after the arrest that is, does not know if that person has ever been convicted of driving while under the influence, then why are we here today even trying to enhance it?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hawes, I think what we're trying to determine, we know that. We all know that. We all know that that's capable of being discovered, and that's how they're being charged, and we can pull up the record and all the rest of that. But what we're trying to understand is the actual logistics of implementing this split of the surcharge and the fine that you've devised in here. And we're trying to understand it from the testimony here on how the clerks actually do this. It's not as easy as just looking on the record. It is something that they would have to do that they're not currently doing, that the computer system is not set up to handle, and that it would take extra time out of the clerk's processing of all the collection of these fines. So it certainly is something that can be determined. Nobody's saying that it can't be determined. It's a question of how much more is it going to cost to determine that, and how long will that take? That's what we're trying to discover here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Knudsen, when I tried to put this portion together, I spoke with my county sheriff and my county attorney and other people here in the House, and both my county sheriff and my county attorney did not see this as being difficult at all. In fact, I asked my sheriff to pull up my record and told the county attorney to pull up my record and see what they could find. It's very simple. I've never been convicted. Never been arrested either, just for the record.
Yeah, Senator Knutson. Senator Skoglund.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it would be easy for them to say that, Representative Howes, because they don't have to disperse the money. But somewhere, when that check is written, it goes to some clerk someplace who sends it to somebody to deposit it, who sends a note to somebody who says, you have to figure out this much goes to the state, this much goes to Apple Valley, this much goes here, this much goes there. And I suspect if your county sheriff was responsible for sorting that out as to where the money went across the state, or even your region or your congressional district or whatever, then the county sheriff might say, wait a minute, Representative Howes, this is a bit more complex than I want it to be. It costs me X number of dollars per hour to have people handle these kinds of pieces of papers. We've got other priorities, and I'm not so sure that this is a high one. Find a simple way to doing it, and I don't know if this is a simple way of doing it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoglund, sorry, let's call you Representative. Senator Skoglund, I think we're drifting away and not concentrating on the intent of the House here. The intent is that if I am arrested while driving under the influence, and it's my first time, and I'm standing before the judge and the clerk is doing their thing, they don't have to decide where the money's divided. If I was arrested in the city of Walker and I'm in court there, the city of Walker, Cass County would get the portion. We wouldn't have to worry about any other part of the state, any other jurisdiction, because this would be my first time offense. And there is no figuring out who gets the money. The local jurisdiction does.
I think we've gone far enough on this to know that that we've got some concerns on whether we would be willing to go and adopt this. Representative Lesch, did you have closing words?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, actually merely an inquiry. It appears that this obviously is in the interest of the locals to have this provision in. My question would be to the committee whether language would be appropriate suggesting that this be done on petition of the prosecuting authority, because I know, for example, in the St. Paul City Attorney's Office, we have information indicating whether or not this is a first time and whether or not it's between a .08 and a .10. It being in the locals' interest to do that, I just would pose that to the committee if someone thought that would be a good thing to do. I would offer that motion. Otherwise, we can move on.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's no debate that they know about Minnesota records. We know Minnesota records. You may not know what happened in Wisconsin. We don't know that their records are as good as ours, or South Dakota, or North Dakota, or Canada, or Iowa. Those records are more in doubt, but we know about Minnesota records. We're not arguing about that. But let's say right now at this moment there's a somebody pleading guilty probably to a DWI charge in Minneapolis right now. Now, he may have been arrested in Minnetonka or Hopkins. And the reason is he spent the night in the jail, and he's being arraigned this morning. He might have been arrested in Hopkins or Minnetonka or Eden Prairie or Osseo or who knows where. And it does get complex as to just where all these dollars go and how you slice the pie. That's our only concern, is that we're not going to spend more money trying to sort the dollars out than money goes out, because it is costly to move some dollars from here to there in government. Just as a costly process. And I don't know, is Walker the county seat? Well, the county seat has the trial, but you've got a lot more territory up there than we have in Hennepin County to cover. And again, it can be the same deal. Where they're having when it's DWI day up there, my guess is they probably do them all in one day. Those city attorneys come from all over to prosecute those cases, which is costly.
I want to interrupt you because we're drifting here, but Ms. Marshall, the this obviously appears to me as a an issue where there are some concerns about the application, but also that there's a concern about getting some type of a funding source to pay in this situation. The question in my mind, and I'd like to have you respond to that, is this complexity of getting this or to do this work to sort this out, is that greater than what the revenue that they're going to gain? Or anywhere near it? I mean, is it, you know, really not cost effective, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Mr. Chairman, that's actually kind of hard to answer, but what I would say is what we've always said is, if you think it is sound public policy, then we can make accommodations to do it, although it is probably about the same amount of money as would be brought in. But it goes to two different places, so.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Knudsen.
Maybe a question for Mr. Carger. Is there a fiscal note on this section and the application of this?
Mr. Carter?
Mr. Chair, yes, I believe there is. It's under the Supreme Court part of the fiscal note, which starts on page 21 of 26. This is somewhat of a complicated one because they're doing their revenue, but they're also, these people are also being arrested for other crimes, too. You know, before, if it wasn't the point away to be a careless or something. So they have to subtract out what the other fine was and compared to the new DWI fine, and so it is somewhat of a complicated one, but it does spell it out on pages 21 through 23.
Mr. Chairman, I think, are there two separate fiscal notes here? We've got a fiscal note on the Senate bill, and is there a fiscal note on the House bill? And if so, then could all the members get
We do not have that, so I assume.
Well, yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Knudsen, there are two fiscal notes. The one I'm referring to is the one where I guess we took the same number. It's now Senate File 58. It's 3A, the revised version. Dated 3/29/04.
The members find that? Have you got a copy of those?
Well, Senator Knudsen and I were talking about, it says that, where is it, almost 3.9 administrative staff would be hired. What would they be hired for, and who would be hired from what agency?
Mr. Carger, you...
Mr. Chair, I believe that is for the, and Ms. Marshall can correct me if I'm wrong, I think that is because this is a new crime, it's going to take some more time, and I think they believe, too, that of these people that will be stopped and charged for 0.08 to 0.10, that 25% of these will be repeat offenders. So that will be the extra court time it takes for either because they're going to be facing a gross misdemeanor or a felony, and Ms. Marshall can correct me if I'm wrong.
Ms. Marshall?
Mr. Chairman, members, Mr. Carger is correct.
Sure. And I should point out, too, I think that the other part of that, the important part, too, is that they're assuming an additional a little over 200 of implied consent hearings, which does take additional court time from what they currently have.
I think we've accomplished everything we need to discuss on this. Let's move on to the breath testing devices in section 14, I think. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Strzok.
Mr. Chair, I think I can explain this. Mr. Cleary can correct me if I get anything wrong here, but this was an amendment brought by Representative Westrom regarding devices in bars and restaurants to allow people to test themselves for self-awareness, I guess. Extends liability protection to the owners, not only of the bars, but also the distributors of the machines. Talks about the posting requirement, relieves the DPS from certifying them, and has the bar owner do it. And then in order to eliminate, you know, I can get a higher reading than you, the reading only goes up to 0.09. And it passed, I think it was in committee that came through in committee, I think, in the Transportation Committee.
Any questions on this issue? Fairly clear, I think. All right, that's helpful. Next one is I'm not sure where we go on the financial part of it. But, I think the key to this conference committee relates to the last one on Senate 15 and House 18 on the effective dates, and the Senate position is August 1st, 2004, and the House position is September 1st, 2007, and I think that it's safe to say that we understand what those are, and we will have to battle those with the others. Can you tell me, Representative Strawn, what you're ready to have a caucus, so 10 minutes, return here 10 minutes after the hour?
I think that's reasonable. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I quickly ask a question? The other difference is our appropriation, and I wonder if we could have fiscal staff, maybe they've already figured it out, the difference, what is there a difference between our appropriation out of the general fund to fund some of these costs and your appropriations by the collection and redistributions of the fines? If you could, and if you don't know now, but if we could figure that out, I'd be curious to know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Goodson, we did not really put appropriations into the bill because it does not take effect this biennium or even next biennium. So the first appropriations would start in year 08.
But Mr. Chairman and Mr. Carger, if we could have an estimate, you should be able to tell us an estimate of what that distribution of the redistribution to the local jurisdictions would be, how much that would be.
Oh, yes. That one would be. It's the total for the for fiscal year. If we were to assume it was for the first year that this would go into effect, we're assuming the total distribution to the locals would be about $118,000. Then in the second year and subsequent years, it would be $157,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one other quick question. Just on the effective date, I know you're out, you know, another 3 years, but why September 1st?
Mr. Chair, my understanding when that was, again, that was proposed by amendment in committee, but that is a date that was set that had something to do with the federal highway funds, I believe, Mr. Carter, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think that's the latest they could receive, you know, before the state would be penalized, although we just had a meeting and Mr. Turner was there that we may need clarification on that from new information we received from the Department of Transportation. They, we may have to move that date back a couple months, but But that's what the latest.
But the federal fiscal year is October 1st.
Right.
So
correct.
You know, in any event, it has to be at least prior to that.
Right.
So the rest of it is just a matter of there may be some differences. What you're saying is a few months, perhaps. Sufficient time? Maybe you need more.
I think
10
minutes is sufficient.
All right. 10 minutes. We're in recess. Kevin, did you have a place for?
I'll go to my office.
Oh, it's me.
Probably get the.
Someone you have.
Yeah, but we have a neighbor in one of the agents.
The conference committee will reconvene. Representative Strong.
Mr. Chair, first of all, I would just mention, appreciate the testimony this morning. I would just mention that, as has been reiterated to me several times over the last couple of days, that the House position, specifically on the enactment date, was clarified pretty strongly with the Ray Cox's amendment. He moved to move it back to 04 on the House floor, and it went down unambiguously on a bipartisan vote. And so I understand part of where the House position is coming from here, but I'll just go down the list here and let you know where we're coming from and what we're going to discuss. We would add to the it's the easiest way to do this. I'll go to House Section 11. The expungement, we would add if there is no commercial driver's license held by that person, so that we would remove at least most of that issue. That's agreeable. We would ask that Representative Lesch's suggestion for Section 13 and 15 in the House version add that the surcharges and fine revenue would be sent to the locals upon petition by the city attorney. Is that correct, Representative Lesch?
That's correct.
Is that the right way to say it? Okay. We would leave Section 14 as is. Section 17 has to do with appropriations, which we can't specify at this point, but we would just make the strong statement that we would ask that we focus on local funding. And for Section 18, we would be willing to look at an effective date of January 1 of 2007.
Mr. Chairman?
Chair, Scogel.
Chairman, January 1st of 2007?
Correct, sir.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Strand, usually when there's an offer, we try to get some compromise in there and try to meet the other party where they are, maybe halfway or something. So you're suggesting take House Section 11, take House Section 13 and 15, take House Section 14, and essentially take the House effective date. And you've graciously moved it up 9 months, but we know that your effective date of September 1st doesn't work anyway due to federal traffic administration or highway administration reasons. So,
Mr.
Chairman, I think we all agree 0.08 saves lives, and could be 45 deaths between now and then if the numbers stay the same. Additionally, we know that there's money we don't get, and that'll be $27 billion or so that we will not see until then. We've already missed the incentive money, I have to tell you, it's not acceptable.
But, Mr. Chair, I would just remind the conferees that 2004 was in my original bill. I'm here to represent the House position. And again, that was a very specific and unambiguous vote on the House floor, with both Republicans and Democrats voting resoundingly for 2007 enactment. So that's where we are. And we are willing to discuss, certainly, what I just went over. But that's a starting point for us.
Mr. Chairman, everything else relates to there being a .08 law that you... done here. Everything relates to there being a .08 law, and you know we can pass a January 1st, 2007 date in the year 2006. It's kind of like, why bother now to do it? If we were to wait, we'd have a better chance of getting an earlier date next year or the year after. We have a long time to try to get an earlier date, and once we pass it, then you're not going to reel the date in earlier. But between first priority being lives saved and second priority, the $27 million, again, it's just not acceptable.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, just briefly, and I guess to that point, Senator Skoglund, again, I'm getting repetitive, but again, there's a strong House position. I have to represent that House position. I think it would be advantageous for us to get .08 in law now. The effective date is something that, again, I'm here to represent the House position. I have to get two conferees from the House to vote it out of conference committee, and I have to get enough votes in the House to pass it on the conference report. That's what I'm up against. And again, it's not a Republican and Democrat issue. It's a bipartisan issue in the House. There's a strong feeling that there's a local impact that we need to address, and we can discuss the enactment date and how to deal with those local impacts. I'm in the mood to be pragmatic. I'm in the mood to get this into law. It's important. As you know, I won't be here next year to get this into law. It's something that I feel strongly about. I felt strongly about this bill for a long time. That's why I carried it. I don't disagree with you. You're preaching to the choir as far as the benefits of .08. Just understand where I need to come from in terms of the House position and what we need to do. And I think rather than take our ball and go home, we can come together and at least discuss the enactment date further without criticizing each other.
Sure. Yeah, and, Mr. Chairman, I apologize if I implied or hinted at all, because I know you feel the same as I do about this. I have to tell you, though, in, I don't know, 1997, 1998, the House position at that point in time was to, and we did pass the .08 bill, and we made it effective that August, whatever year it was, and that's 6 years ago now, 7 years ago. Perhaps Mr. Backus or Mr. Carter remembers what year it was, Mr. Cleary?
97.
97, 7 years ago. So House positions change, and it's possible that I'd like to get this done, too. I'd like to get it done this year, for this year. But it's possible next year's House may feel differently, and we could get an earlier date. So putting it off a couple of years just doesn't serve the needs of the state, doesn't serve the safety needs of the state. But again, I apologize if I hinted, implied, because I certainly never thought that you felt any differently than you've ever felt any differently than I feel about the issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Hubb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Skoglund, I do understand your position and how you feel, and I'm considerate of that. But if my recollection serves me correct, when you passed it in the House, nothing happened in the other body. This year, it passed the Senate. It passed the House in a different form. I strongly believe it will not pass the House floor any differently than it did a few weeks ago, or months, maybe now. We have an opportunity here, Senator Skoglund, to agree and actually enact this law. And the headline would be, the governor signs .08. And I truly believe that in and of itself will create better drivers, more sensible drinkers, and save lives. the headline alone, governor signs 0.08. We have an opportunity when both bodies have actually passed it. Sure, the enactment date is different. But if we don't do it this year, and again, we come back next year, the Senate will be the same. The House might be different. It may pass it. It may not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I suppose that's possible, but everything I heard from the governor is that he wants the bill effective August 1st. That's what I read. I see Senator Knutson nodding his head. The governor would like a bill now. I think 47 other states have already passed this bill. 48 now. So there's two left. Two left then. There's things I like to be first in, and there are a few things that I'm willing to be last in, but this is one that's not acceptable to be last in. If we do it first, we save lives. That's number one. We save lives if we do it now. Absolutely no question about it. And that's number one in my book. And I think we ought to act now. Let's save some lives, Representative House.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, with all due respect, the governor was my majority leader, and he voted in that body. Today, he does not have a vote in that body. Governor would also like a stadium. Governor likes a lot of other things. That's not a reason for me to change my vote just because the governor wants it.
I would only indicate that I had hoped for a more realistic approach to that from the House. It strikes me as that a change from September 1st to January 1st is not a change at all, and that what we have not done is done anything that addresses the issue in regard to highway safety and the deaths that occur and the property damage and the injured people. The whole of that issue needs to be resolved. It doesn't need to wait for 3 or 4 years to do that. And I think that that we need a more meaningful approach from the House in order to move forward on this issue. I frankly think that if this is the best offer that you can come up with, why we're clearly going to have to let the matter die until January, with the expectation that the people of the state of Minnesota aren't going to be willing to accept the death and injured and the property loss, and they're not going to be accepting of the loss of highway dollars. And I don't care how you say it, when you cut off the highway dollars and there's no use of that money for that many years, it just doesn't make sense. I'm sure you've got a safe seat and you are not running, so that's not a big deal, and Representative Lesh may be okay, but there are a lot of people in the legislature that are likely to be looking at a reason why they did what I just mentioned. It just strikes me as how could we in good conscience adopt a January 1st, 2007 amendment? I mean, that just is not realism.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Knutson.
On the Senate floor, I made some comments, and I guess I don't understand why the delay. And my comments on the Senate floor at that time were that it's simply an embarrassment, and just an embarrassment to our state, that we are one of the last ones, now the last of two states, to not adopt it. And so your proposal is to tell the people that we have adopted it, but really not adopted until 07. There's not another state that has done that. So we would be a state saying, well, we're going to adopt it, or we have adopted it, but we really haven't. And I think that's just being disingenuous to the citizens of the state of Minnesota. We've already lost millions of dollars in the incentive money. We stand to delay the receipt of probably about $25 billion in highway transportation funding. It's beyond me. And then not to even mention the most important thing, and that's estimated to be 14 lives a year. So why would we delay this? We're required to do it by the federal government. We're losing transportation dollars. We're losing lives. We're one of the last two states to do this. And there's still a pushback by the House on the effective date. I don't understand. I know there's frustration with the federal government requiring the states to do things. But I don't understand the mentality that says, no, we want to pass something but not make it effective until 2007, which is basically doing nothing, because any legislative body meeting after this session can change that.
Sure. Representative Strauss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, at the risk of being repetitive to my House colleagues, I think they've delineated their feelings, and I think you know my position. I can go through and read the names of the 23 DFLers who voted for the 07 enactment on the amendment. It is a strong House position. We have moved off of the hard date of September 1st, 2007. That's a jump. We've moved off of that. We've expressed our commitment to local funding and taking care of the local governments that will be impacted by this. If this bill dies this year, it's we've made an offer. Whether you consider that to be a good faith offer is up to you, but it is an offer. We've moved off of 07. I've talked about the dynamics of the votes in the House on this issue. If the bill doesn't go anywhere this year, that's a decision you have to make. I'm a police officer, as Senator Foley formerly was a trooper, and he knows that we have sort of a bias for see the problem, solve the problem, get it over with, and not spending a lot of time staking out positions and playing a lot of games. I'm not in the mood for that. I don't think you are either. We are happy to entertain something that I think needs to move off of the hard enactment date that you're at as well, and we're happy to talk about that. So. I don't think this is a black and white issue. I think there's room for pragmatic compromise, and I'm certainly willing to do that.
Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, just addressing a couple of the concerns that were raised. I started out in this process looking at it as a prosecutor, as a person who would have to deal with a lot of these charges that came through the courtroom when they occurred, and I was concerned that we had in the wake of many cuts to local government yet another situation where we'd be loading up the amount of work that local governments would have to perform to keep our citizens safe, and yet without a reciprocal amount of funding to take care of that. I have kind of a personal interest in this because the files are going to be on my desk, and already my workload has been increasing quite a bit over the past few years that I've been doing this. That said, when I saw the vote come down on the House floor, it was clear to me where the House was on this. My thoughts are that if we do not enact this bill right now, we have the potential at all and not have a bill at all, whether it's delayed or whether it's brought up or whether it's actually enacted this year. We will have the opportunity, as Senator Skoglund stated, that if in fact next year's House feels differently, we have an opportunity to do differently. And I think the important thing now is to get that public education campaign started, to say a .08 bill has been signed. That is what is going to be the primary thing that saves lives. I think we owe it to ourselves to enact it this year. If we have an opportunity to better ourselves in a future legislature, we can do that, but I think we should take the bill as we have it now, and the offer is presented by the House.
Representative Lesh, and I've heard this discussion in regard to impact on locals, but we've gone through a lot of that and ways of taking care of that. We also have a situation where under the current law, if we don't do something to 07, you've got a loss of all of those monies, not only by the state trunk highway system and the state roads, but also on the city streets and on the county highways. And those folks are crying for money. You may not have a problem with commuting and stuff, but most of the rest of us that live and work in the metropolitan area have a terrible time, and it's taking us many hours of work just to do that. And I don't see any offer by the House that would deal with spending more money to eliminate the concern of the local units of government, other than what we've already addressed. And I think that that you say, you know, we can pass this and it'll be effective, but it really won't be effective until the enactment date, and that's everything. It's, you know, what are we going to do between now and 07 in regard to those offenders?
Mr. Chair, I think fundamentally the principle is that the legislature will have passed and the governor will have signed a bill which deals with many of the public safety concerns and the public education campaign that we aim to implement in the wake of the signing of this bill. Now, federal highway dollars and even dollars that flow to local governments for the building of roads do not deal with additional police officers that Representative Strand's going to need for his department, additional troopers, so the many hardworking troopers that work in the East Metro that bring their cases to my office, additional prosecutors that we're going to need to resolve some of these cases, especially if they start to become more complex based upon blood alcohol readings of a lower amount of 0.08. I think that the money we're talking about here, forgive me, but I've gotten to be a bit cynical. I know that the locals' enforcing authority is not going to be seeing any of that money. We absolutely need the money for roads. There's no question about it. What we will lose is we will stand to lose some interest, but that interest pales in comparison to what the fiscal note shows will be the impact on local governments when we enact this.
But Representative Lesh, you've not proposed any thing that would solve the problem that you're laying out. Why is that? The only approach you have is to delay the effective date of this. Well, that doesn't make sense to me, that if this type of blood alcohol level is important for the highway safety in Minnesota and in other states, why shouldn't we enact it now? And if there are means, there are problems with funding state or local units of government, why we don't address those?
Mr. Chair, first of all, I may be cynical, I'm also not naive, and I know what the House will pass in terms of appropriations for enforcement, but I also, similar to knowing what the House will pass for appropriations for enforcement, I also know what the House will pass in terms of 0.08 and its implementation. And I think it's very important that we have a bill passed this year so people know we have passed 0.08, whether implementation is delayed or not. And I think we owe it to ourselves to get a bill out of this committee that is palatable to the House of Representatives. And based upon the vote totals that I've seen come down in that House, it has to be one that involves delayed implementation similar to what we proposed in our compromise.
Chairman.
Senator Scoble.
Chairman, the Senate is willing and open to the other differences in the bills. That's what conference committees do, is that they work those out. But I happen to think that the persuasiveness of the three conferees would work well in the House. I think you could persuade your colleagues to get 68 votes. I served in the House
longer than any of you, as many years as all of you put together. And I know that, yeah, this is a House position. That's what the bill is like when it leaves. But everybody knows it comes back a compromise bill, a different bill. They had their vote on their one feeling that maybe the date should be delayed. That didn't prevail in conference committee. So then you vote on the bill, because the truth is most of them want 0.08. They do want 0.08, and that's the option before them. Say worst comes to worst, and the bill goes down. Well, what's the difference? Pass it next year then. And I see Representative Howell shaking his head. Maybe he doesn't want to pass it next year, but you could do it. You three could do it. You three could convince your colleagues to pass it. I know you could. You're that good.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch is that good.
Thank you. I second that motion.
You have to remember, Representative Sean, that this is recorded, and he'll probably use that in his election campaign.
I'll need it in my district, Mr. Chair.
Unfortunately, Representative Sean, I really think that you should take another look at this and see if there's any possibility of making any movement that's beyond the movement that you provided. Would you be interested in taking another 10 or 15 minute recess before we take a vote on these things?
And I guess I'm somewhat new to this process, Mr. Chair. Do you want another offer from the House, or do you want to make an offer to us, or how exactly does that work? Or which do you prefer?
I'd prefer some more meaningful approach, as it may be. The issues on the we're really focused on the effective date, and the other issues I'm just not in a position to say that we would take all of those, but we certainly would be willing to move considerable direction on those other amendments. What'll kill this bill is whether we get an effective date that's realistic. So I would hope that you would be able to make some substantive changes in that.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I guess I would ask if you and your conferees could come back with an effective date suggestion for us. We have moved off of September of 07. We have made that jump. You have not. If you could come back, we would be happy to entertain that. And again, I think the indications from my two fellow conferees has been pretty strong. So I guess I would prefer if you could come back with a date for us and show that you're willing to compromise a little bit on that effective date. We would be happy to take a look at it.
All right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the Senate is willing to compromise on the additional language that the House has that the Senate doesn't have. But say we could do all the other effective dates next year. I'd prefer to see you at the bill signing ceremony as an author, not as a guest.
Or 8 minutes, I guess, after 11, if I can see the incorrect, maybe I should look at my watch. But how about 20 minutes after?
Sure.
Same place.
Got to go to caucus, don't we?
Really?
Committee's in recess.
We recess, yeah.